for this and all Clinical Updates podcasts, a 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit will be available for a limited time. To claim credit, view the slide deck associated with this podcast and complete the evaluation found in the slides. Speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me today in the Clinical Updates podcast. Today, I have Paige Hennen. Hello.
Hello.
So we are going to be chatting about polycystic ovarian syndrome, or what is it, PCOS or PCOS? What do you call it in the abbreviation?
We call it PCOS.
PCOS, yes. So let's start off by how it is defined.
Yeah. Well, I guess the most important thing I would love to start off with is that I think that the name should be changed, because it's definitely not all about the ovaries. And I think that that's probably a big misconception about PCOS, is that it's just, we obviously know it only affects females, but it really has much more to do with the body than the ovaries itself. So ultimately what PCOS is a syndrome, a group of symptoms based on different hormone imbalances in the body.
Okay. So what is a hormone imbalance?
There's a few of them. So there's kind of classic characteristics of PCOS, and then there's people that may have some symptoms and not the others. But the biggest things with PCOS are an androgen excess. So like in the female population, we do have testosterone in our body, but we're not supposed to have an excess amount of it. And a lot of times with PCOS, you have a higher amount of testosterone. There is often an imbalance between a female's follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. So these are the hormones that basically make us ovulate. And instead of being kind of balanced out one way, they kind of go the other way.
Yep.
And then another big part of PCOS is a trouble with your insulin level, either like your insulin level isn't secreted properly, or even if it is secreted, it doesn't work like it should.
Okay, so the root cause is androgen excess, pretty much.
A big part of it is androgen excess, exactly.
Okay. Now, who is at risk for? Is there any genetic preponderance or any particular ethnicity?
Yeah, there definitely is. A big part of PCOS is kind of an unknown thing. A lot of it comes from just unknown causes, but we definitely have found that there is some genetic predisposition. So if you have family members, parents or siblings, mothers, or siblings that have PCOS, that you can be meet more predisposed to have that as an issue as well. There's definitely different ethnicities that have a higher predisposition. It's higher in the Hispanic and Latin American populations, a little bit higher in Asian populations as well, compared to white. But I truly do believe that there is a lot of environmental factors as well. And so what we once thought about PCOS and who was at risk for it, I think it's starting to change as well, because we're seeing it in all populations of women now.
Now, when you say, I think, is that your opinion or there's literature to support that?
I think there is some literature. I didn't, I included some slides when I was looking into this topic, and I didn't have any evidence listed there, but there is some literature that basically shows that the rates of PCOS nationwide are going up, and I see it in practice. So I probably see it more than what the literature reports right now, but that's also the population of people that I'm working with a lot.
So I'm asking the question, not like my theory, but is there anything that reports that there's the genetic plus there's a subset of people that get it through an interaction with the environment, whether through diet or along the lines of that?
Yes. Okay. They actually have been able to identify certain gene mutations that will put people at higher risk for PCOS. But there are a lot of women that have been diagnosed with PCOS that maybe go to the lengths of testing for that, and they don't have those gene mutations. And so then in those certain cases, we're kind of thinking that probably came more from more of the environmental factors, people's lifestyle choices, or what they may or may not be consuming, or what they're exposed to in the environment.
So diet and weight.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I like that you started off by saying that there's more to it than the ovaries, because if I may ask you, would it be fair to define it in GYN system manifestations and non-GYN system manifestations? And if you would agree, yes, which are the manifestations for both spheres?
So there's definitely the GYN manifestations, which the biggest ones that fall into those categories are irregular menstrual cycles. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes down to people's fertility, PCOS can definitely affect the ability to conceive, especially if they're not ovulating regularly. And then for the non-GYN, it kind of falls back into that androgen excess. A lot of women will have hirsutism or irregular hair growth, where we wouldn't typically feel like women should have facial hair growth, or even on their chest or their back. And because of that excess of androgens, they can have that or increase acne. And then with the insulin components of it, a lot of times that will lead to obesity, metabolic syndrome, which then puts people at more risk for developing things like high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, other lipid problems.
Sleep apnea also?
Yeah, sleep apnea, absolutely.
Okay. Now, one aspect that I wonder, which I never, I shouldn't say never, I always thought about, it's got to be, you know, there are diseases that carry a very high emotional toll. And this, what do you find in, because for a woman, it has to be very, very disruptive, especially if it's a young woman. What do you see?
Yeah, it has a huge effect on somebody's mental health. A big part of it is if they kind of have the classic symptoms of PCOS, where they're already struggling with weight and difficulties with weight loss. And then you add on top of that skin and hair changes. And I mentioned hirsutism, where you can have hair growth in places where you don't want it, but that also can lead to hair loss in other parts of the body. So a lot of women will notice a lot of hair shedding and thinning on top, but then they'll grow it in other spots. So there is a ton of research that shows that there's a huge link between anxiety and depression and even like compulsive eating disorder, certain things like that go hand in hand with the diagnosis of PCOS.
I mean, to put it in simple terms, but I would think about it, if I was a primary for these women, you suddenly, I mean, in lay terms, you feel ugly and you cannot have children.
Yeah, right. The diagnosis can be very daunting for people when they hear it, because you look up the research and go, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to lose weight, get pregnant, have some sort of normalcy in my life, and my mood's going to be affected, and I'm going to have to pay thousands for laser hair removal. And it really can be super, super daunting. So I think when you're talking about the diagnosis with people, you really have to educate a lot and say, you know, it's not one disease that you have that there's one treatment. It's really all about symptom management and figure out what their goal is and go forward from there and just kind of peel away the layers of the onion and deal with one thing at a time.
Okay. I want to go get to management next, but before, I wanted to ask you, is it a very dramatic thing? Like, for one question, for example, is, are by far women who tend to be overweight, or do you see sometimes a very striking presentation which you go from normal skinny to being overweight? What do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like kind of this classic presentation where teenage girls will, you know, start with their menstrual cycle and it'll be irregular. And then over time, there is more and more irregularity. And that then comes with weight gain and mood changes and skin and hair changes. And it can be a bit of a gradual process, but I have had multiple women who have zero symptoms whatsoever. And all they are trying to do is get pregnant and they can't. Mm-hmm. And we do some sort of workup and find that maybe their hormone levels are a little bit off, or their ultrasound actually does show the components of PCOS. And for those conversations, it's can even be harder to kind of say, okay, you have this condition, you don't have any of the classic symptoms, but now here we are and we still have to deal with it the same way.
How do you screen and confirm the diagnosis?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to do it. There's basically multiple governing bodies who have come up with criteria for how to actually diagnose PCOS. The most common one that I guess I use in practice is called Rotterdam criteria. And ultimately, there's three criteria, and people have to have two of mm-hmm. those three criteria to come up with this diagnosis. So the first one would be signs of androgen excess. So either their labs confirm that they have higher androgens, or they have symptoms of androgen excess with obesity, hirsutism, acne. So the androgen excess is one of them. The menstrual irregularities would be the second one, where they may have cycles that they're actually having bleeding, but we find out that they're not actually ovulating and ovulatory bleeding, or they're, you know, supposed to be getting a cycle every month, but they may go many, many months in between. I've had people that have gone years in between having menstrual cycles. And then the third criteria for that one is actually the ultrasound findings of multiple follicles and enlarged ovaries.
And that's a universal finding?
Yeah. Yep. Now, I have had people, you can do an ultrasound on somebody and their ovaries can look enlarged and have multiple follicles, but they may only, you might be doing an ultrasound on them in their window where they're really, really fertile. And So I definitely had people that come in and say, somebody told me I had PCOS, but they don't. It just looked like that day and moment. But for many women, if they're already having those symptoms of whatever it is, the cycle irregularities or the androgen excess, they're ultrasound will show enlarged multiple follicle ovaries as well.
So it sounds to me like with all the items you are describing, should all these patients been seen by OBGYN?
I think it's a really good idea to have OBGYN and a family practice provider, because again, there's kind of the GYN side of things where we can mm-hmm. help manage certain things, but we're probably not out there screening people's cholesterol levels routinely and screening them for diabetes outside of pregnancy. So having just comprehensive care is really important.
But they need to be referred to you upon, I mean, people can start the workup, but
yeah,
even if inconclusive.
Yep.
And last but not least, what is the roadmap to management?
Yep. And really that kind of comes down to, you know, when somebody's coming in, you have to obviously give them the news of what's going on and figure out what their goals are. And if their biggest issue is that they want to get pregnant, then we help them figure out what needs to happen so that they ovulate more
regularly.
Regularly, thank you. So they ovulate more regularly so that they're actually able to conceive. Now, I have women that'll come in and say, it just drives me crazy that the cycles are irregular. And then we'll say, well, really the biggest goal for that would be, let's put you on some sort of contraception to help to regulate those cycles. And then that cycle regulation can definitely help with some of that androgen excess as well. So figure out what their most bothersome symptom is and go down the road of figuring out what to do with that, whether it be weight management, fertility, or even some of the physical characteristics that come along with it.
Do you use androgen suppression of any sort? Or?
Yeah, so a big one that we will use, especially in the world of if they're thinking about fertility, is that we'll do metformin for people to mm-hmm. help with the insulin part of it. But a lot of times the insulin part of it will be taken care of or at least improved with the metformin. But the metformin will then cause people to have a little bit of weight loss, which then mm-hmm. leads to people having a decrease in that over production of the androgen. And same thing with birth control. I mean, sometimes doing oral contraceptive pills for 3 months to just kind of suppress everything that's happening in someone's body to give a little bit of regulation is enough to reset things for a period of time so that they're able to conceive if that's what the goal is.
And last question, beyond the risk for diabetes and weight related and all that, is there any long-term associated increase in something, malignancy, for example, anything, or is just
yeah.
a disease that lingers?
Yep. There's absolutely a risk of uterine hyperplasia. So ultimately, when they're not shedding the lining of the uterus routinely because of mm-hmm. anovulation or irregular cycles, it can ultimately lead to a buildup of the lining inside of the uterus. And if that is not dealt with, it can lead to hyperplasia and definitely lead to malignancies if not dealt with. So uterine cancer would be the biggest malignancy risk with it.
Great information. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.